From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. So I would think that we can all agree we want to raise well-rounded, emotionally intelligent, kind human beings. But in the culture and the climate that we live in, that can be tough. I think especially when we're raising boys in a world that often awards stereotypical masculinity. So joining us today to talk more about this is parenting expert Jennifer Fink. She has a new book out. It's called Building Boys. And I want to welcome you to the program. It's really great to talk with you.
Thanks. I've been looking forward to talking to you too, Gemma.
Okay. So we both are boy moms. You have four sons. So
correct.
Already elevate you to a level of just expertise right there. But I'm curious, Jennifer, what got you into this realm of study and research?
What got me into this was having boys. You have two sons, correct?
I do.
So I had two sons at this point, and I did not understand what they were doing. They could go randomly from what looked like super content and quiet, sitting on the floor, totally engaged in Sesame Street. Nothing happened that I could see. And then they would like randomly jump up, start chasing each other, jump on the couch, you know, leap onto each other, wrestle. And mm-hmm. this made no sense to me. And their dad was saying, yep, that's normal. Wait, really? No, it's not. And that's when I started researching and learning more about boys. And initially it was just to survive my own life, to better mm-hmm. understand what was happening in my house. And the more I dug into this, the more I realized that what was happening in my house was happening in a lot of other houses, that a lot of us who have boys were encountering the same issues and the same problems, and we weren't really talking about it. And there were reasons for all of this. I work as a freelance journalist at this point, so this tendency to dig in and see what's happening was pretty innate. And so it was a combination of, you know, started personal, moved professional, and today we have a book.
And I will tell our audience that I found you because I was desperately trying to figure out how do I raise these heathens that are in my home. And you have a podcast called On Boys, and I was recommended about it years ago from another friend of mine who is raising boys. And I have to tell you, when I started listening to this, it was like, oh, okay, this is normal. And not that, I mean, I have five brothers. I mean, I understood.
I have four, right?
Right.
You would think we would be prepared for this. I wasn't.
Right. No, and I wasn't either. And I think the big part of it that I wasn't ready for was the physicality of boys. And it is just as you said, right? They'll get up and they chase each other and they hit each other and they're so tactile, right? Everything. And even now I have an almost 15-year-old and an 11-year-old, and I'm like, I swear it's their love language, right?
Yes.
And with that said, I think we almost punish boys for this part of who they inherently are. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, it is extremely complicated today. And I think it's especially difficult for those of us who are female, who grew up female, because we don't have any intuitive understanding of this. This was mm-hmm. not my experience at all growing up. And I think in our concern to want to raise good, kind, nonviolent men, I think we can all agree that's part of the goal too.
Of course.
We are hyper alert for anything that we think portends violence or violent tendencies. It is impossible to be alive right now and not be aware of violence, not be aware of mass shootings. Nobody wants that to be their son. So we kind of think, well, let's just squash this when they show it when they're young, and then we can make sure they'll be great guys. But the problem with that, first of all, is that there is no scientific link between boys wrestling and roughhousing and their likelihood of becoming a violent person in the future, mm-hmm. except that research has actually shown that children in general, not just boys, children who engage in rough and tumble play, who engage in putting air quotes around this, violent play, like war play, or, mm-hmm. you know, good guys versus bad guys, superhero play, actually tend to be really pretty well adjusted. So we're counterintuitively squashing the thing that may help them work through all of this, may help them learn how to discover and accept boundaries and limits, because we think that's the right thing to do to prevent violence later.
Mm. You know, it's interesting too. I mean, I got to this point with raising my boys where it's like, okay, if there's not blood or a broken bone, go for it, right?
Yes.
Just don't hurt each other, right? I mean, my oldest is quite a bit physically larger than our youngest. And so there was conversation about you have to be more mindful because you actually really could hurt him with the mm-hmm. roughhousing, right? But I mean, you in a way, it's almost like you give up. I mean,
yes,
at least.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. One of the statistics I found researching this book that made me feel so much better about things, it was these researchers studying sibling relationships. And, you know, as you can imagine, conflict is a super common thing in sibling relationships. And these researchers found that when they observed siblings in action, they documented the occurrence of sibling conflict at a rate of up to 8 times per hour.
Oh,
do the math on that,
house.
Gemma.
That's my house.
You do not
that's my
have
house.
Time, right? You don't have time to intervene every time. And it's not necessarily helpful to intervene every time either.
Okay, so then let's take this idea of, right, how physical boys are, this roughhousing, and mm-hmm. and put it into the educational environment. Because this is something that I have seen personally with my own children, in particular my youngest, who tends to be very, much more physical in a lot of ways, right? Plus he's got mm-hmm. ADHD on top of it. So we add all of that in there. And I feel like in a lot of ways that who boys are is almost seen as a negative within the educational system. In particular, I think in elementary school, because school is created, for girls. And I know a lot of people are probably like, that's not true. But what I'm saying is it's the sitting and the being quiet and the being able to focus and all of that.
Yeah.
Girls are so much better at that usually than boys are, especially when they're younger.
And I know there are people who will say, well, it's because we socialize girls that way and we don't with boys. And there may be a mm-hmm. kernel of truth to that. I won't say that there's
Correct.
Not, but there's also neurological and biological reasons for that. Girls' brain development and body development proceeds at a different pace than boys. So generally speaking, your average 5-year-old girl is more prepared for a sit-down style of learning and reading and writing than your average 5-year-old boy because of biology. We catch up as adults, but I think that's an important point. You are absolutely right. I think the early elementary system is a poor fit for so many, many kids, and especially boys. And I recently got a puppy, Gemma. There are so many similarities between puppies and small children, especially boys. If you've ever watched a group of puppies, right? They are all over on top of each other, tackling, nipping, biting. This is kind of naturally how young creatures learn in the world. They don't sit down in neat rows. I understand there's differences between dogs and humans, but not as many as you might think. And if I got to be ruler of the world, which isn't going to happen, but if I got to be ruler of the world, I really wish that we could allow young children, both boys and girls, the opportunity to continue to learn via movement and exploration mm-hmm. in those early years, and then add in the reading and writing. Right now, we spend those early years, sit down, you got to learn to read, you got to learn to write, because by third grade, that's the only way you're going to learn. And that's just not how humans naturally learn.
Mm-hmm. And I will say this, that we were so lucky that my youngest, his third grade teacher was pivotal for him. She mm-hmm. She's a boy mom. And
makes all the difference.
In the way that she could handle boys, right?
That energy.
And they could, that it is, it's the energy. It's the, you know, and with that said, I think, and I know this is very controversial, but I think it's important to talk about. And this is, I think, all of the female empowerment that we see. And mm-hmm. I say that I am a girl. I was raised in a time where it was very difficult for girls to even play Little League, right?
Yes.
I mean, that boys did that. Girls were second. I mean, I was raised in that environment. We have fought and fought to try to still have equality. We still do not have equity.
There's still much work to be done.
There is so much work to be done. We still need female empowerment. My concern is that when we elevated girls, which we needed to do, and
Absolutely.
We still need to do, we kind of let the bottom fall out of with boys.
Yeah.
And I think that plays into so much of this toxic masculinity of how, you know, elementary schools are set up, right? It is, I feel like as a mom to boys, that all we're trying to do is help them to navigate this so that they'll stay out of trouble.
Right. Right. We're just trying to get them through. You know, having been a parent now, my oldest is 25. So I've been doing this for more than a quarter century. And in that time period, and starting even before that, schools shifted a little bit. And the things that probably you and I and many parents were doing in first grade is now common kindergarten material. Mm. You know, preschool is so much more common. If you look at a lot of preschools, kids are expected to be able to print their name in preschool. So developmentally, we're asking kids to do things they might not be ready for. And then the increased focus on academics, because we're all worried about our kids falling behind. And mm-hmm. I don't think it was any, we are trying to make school better for girls and worse for boys. But I think that that was the intent. Or excuse me. But I think that that was the effect. I think that that was the effect. And so then, yes, under the current system, you do have a lot of boys who are getting in trouble because they are physically and neurologically not able to sit and concentrate for longer than 10, maybe 20 minutes. Did you know that 80% of those expelled from preschool are males?
I'm not surprised. I am not surprised.
And then I mean, about how that, you know, perpetuates over time, because do you want to go back to a place where you are constantly getting in trouble for doing things that seem natural and normal to you, but suddenly this lady in front's telling you can't do?
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you see that also in those elementary school years too,
yes.
right? Where
yes.
because of boys just needing to, I mean, they, you know, they're physical. I mean, they'll maybe hit someone, right? Or they'll be physical on the playground, all of that. And so they then get into trouble. And then I wonder, on top of that, when boys are seeing these messages of girls can do anything, they can be mm-hmm. anything, which I am 100% on board with that. In your research, have you seen anything as to how that affects these young boys when they see all of that, but they're not getting those messages? And I know that people will say boys have gotten those messages forever. They see themselves in these roles of power and all of that. I completely understand that.
I love that we are both women having this conversation, because we have lived that experience as women and we know that.
Yes.
As a boy mom, one of the things that's really opened my eyes to is their experience in the world. So first of all, my boys living right now, your boys living right now, they don't know until we tell them what things were like in the 70s, in the 80s, prior mm-hmm. to that. They don't know that women couldn't get a credit card in their own name, that women could be fired for being pregnant. They don't know those things. And so they get dropped into the world, and very much in little boys' worlds, through elementary school, through grade school, even into high school and college, the boys are in these circumstances where they see the girls absolutely excelling. If you look in pretty much every classroom throughout the United States these days, a mixed gender classroom, it's the girls who are at the top of the class, who are leading the extracurricular activities. And so that's what the boys see. And then they hear people talking about girl power. And so, I mean, yeah, the girls are doing great. nobody's telling them that. Mm. And I have heard from parents whose kids have said to them, whose boys have said, why don't they ever say that boys can be whatever they want to be? And as adults, sometimes we have to stop and realize that the children that were born 5 years ago, 10 years ago, have not heard that message. And they need to hear that message too. I've also heard, you know, teenage boys, including some of my own, you know, it's 100% totally acceptable girl power. But you can't go to school and walk around and say boy power.
Oh, not at all. You could never do that. Right? You could never do that. But I think that's fascinating that it is. It's, I mean, as you were saying that, I was like, oh, that's right. These boys don't know what it was like when we were growing up. So I think, of course, girls can be everything and they should be able to be anything.
I think this is where boy moms in particular have a powerful role to play because, especially when they're little, you know, they love us, they respect us, they know us, and we can help provide some of that context. I think it is really important for boys growing into men to understand the context. And I think that we need to take some time to consider what the situation might look like from their perspective and what support they need to become whatever they want to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say I have told my boys that they can be whatever they want to be. And one of my children came back and said, I can't be a fish. I'm like, okay. Now you're just being contrary.
I always feel like I have to close the loopholes with my children. Whatever I say, they will find the loophole and try and exploit it.
100%. So I want to get to the book itself, Jennifer, because in the book, you give really 10 rules of how to raise boys. And it's really from, I mean, toddlerhood to teenagers, right? So let's talk about some of them. And I mean, we can't get to all 10 of them in this interview, but what is one that you want to make sure that parents, understand?
So the chapter that I wrote first actually is chapter 5. And chapter 5 is based on the rule or guideline, help him find and develop his talents. And this gets to what we were talking about before, right? Like we all have these unique gifts. We all have these unique talents. Many of our boys are growing up in and spending a lot of time in environments where their natural inclinations are shamed or discouraged because they're considered disruptive. They don't fit into what we want them to do. Mm-hmm. And the other reason why I think this is so important is because whether we say it explicitly or not, a lot of our boys are absorbing and getting this message that there's something wrong with being a guy, with being a boy, with being male. I think you and I understand that the term toxic masculinity, which we still hear a lot, is not meant at all to say that men and boys are toxic. It was talking about specific behaviors, but I'm not sure that our boys understand that. It's another term we have to talk about with them. So one way to really build a sense of authentic confidence and competence and self-respect is by helping your child discover and build their innate gifts and talents.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about another chapter, and this is about emotional intelligence. Yep. And this is incredibly important to me with my boys. Because I think a lot of times when we talk about this idea of toxic masculinity, it's this idea of don't cry, right? Be a man.
Yes.
Don't let your feelings out. I have always been like, you can cry. I mean, there are times when you cry so much, I just need you to go to another room, but you don't need to stop crying. Just I can't have you do it in front of me.
You don't have to do it here.
Yes, you can do it. But with that said, it really is this idea of all emotions are okay. And you have the right to feel all of those emotions. I'll give you an example. I mean, just the other day, my oldest son, he sprained his ankle really badly in January. Ooh. He had, you know, and he's in the middle of basketball season. Not a great thing. Literally just yesterday, he tweaks it again. He comes home and he is so upset. And he's kind of taking it out on me, right? Just because he's angry and he's frustrated and he's sad. And then he finally just, and I'm just kind of like letting him do his thing. And he goes, and then finally goes, I'm sorry, Mom. And I'm like, for what? And he goes, well, because I got mad at you. And I go, oh, no, no. And I said, so here's the thing. I go, you have every right to be angry right now, to be frustrated right now, to be sad right now. I said, I am frustrated for you. And I was like, what you need to be mindful of is don't take your frustration out on the people who love you and care about you.
Yeah.
But you have every right to feel all of this. And I have always emphasized that with my boys. And I love how you write about this in the book, because I don't think as parents, we sometimes have the tools to tell boys that it's okay to feel these feelings, even though if we had girls, we would be telling them those things.
It's interesting, right? I think that was such a beautiful example and really a masterclass in how to handle this. And this is something that if we are honest,
well, I don't do it every day. Every once in a while, I get it right.
Of course you don't, right? Because as adults, we parents, we still don't have this 100% figured out. I'm 50 years old and I still need to work on emotional regulation. I still need to work on recognizing and accepting emotions. And for many of us who are parenting or teachers or coaching, we didn't grow up with this affirmation of emotions thing. I don't know about you, Gemma, but that was not what was going on in my house growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. And so with that,
it's hard for us because we're trying to do something that we don't have a lot of great models of doing. And then we really don't have great models of doing it for boys. I think that that's starting to shift increasingly. I think we are realizing that it is important and actually healthier to, as you did, acknowledge the emotions, to affirm them. Yes, totally okay to feel this. And then over time, and this takes lots of time, repetition, and practice, you know, you can feel the emotion. What you do with that emotion, how you express it in the world, that's something that we can talk about, because no, you can't hurt and harm other people because you feel something inside.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the thing, right? I think we have to do better at allowing boys to embrace whatever emotion they are feeling. I think we are very good at that when it comes to girls. And I went back to, you know, even when they were babies, and it was like, well, they're a human being. I mean, they happen. Yeah. I happen to have boys, right? But as human beings, we all have the same emotions, right? So therefore, we should not gender those emotions, if that makes sense.
It makes absolute sense. And it complicates things somewhat, because we are still at this moment living in a world that does, to a certain extent, gender emotions. And so also as parents and concerned adults, as our boys are growing, we have to be conscious of those other messages that they're getting. There is still more of a societal acceptance of anger in boys than sadness. And so sometimes with a young man or a boy, you have to sort of keep talking and keep digging through, or give him time to process through what may first appear as anger. But as was the case with your son, you know, there's sadness, there's grief in there, there's disappointment.
And I will say this, that yesterday on the car ride home, you know, I'm trying to like talk to him, right? I'm trying to like pull things out. And all of a sudden I had this moment of like, the last thing he wants to do is talk to me about this right now.
Yep.
And he was getting a little upset. And so I finally just go, hey, I go, Ben, you know what? And I'm like, you can actually look at me and say, Mom, I don't want to talk about this right now. I'll let you know when I want to talk about this. And he looks at me and he goes, I don't want to talk about this right now. I'm like, okay.
That's great intelligence right now, and great tips for parents. Because how often do we pick up our kids from school or practice and we want to talk about it then? It's a good time for us. It's not a good time for our kiddo.
Yeah. And I think I just so appreciate, you know, that part of the book with emotional intelligence, because I feel just as a society, we must do better by our boys in this regard, because I think there is a domino effect when we do not allow boys to not feel shame. Oh, I mean, when we allow boys to feel shame around their emotions.
Yes. And that has been the dominant experience, the dominant paradigm for boys and young men for the last couple generations. And I think it is so important and such powerful work that we can start shifting that now. And as you alluded to, and I did as well, like, this isn't going to be perfect. You're not going to get this right all the time. Nobody does.
Mm-hmm. And before I let you go, you know, another thing that seems to sit with me and what I think about a lot is that I think when we talk about, you know, this emotional intelligence with boys, when we talk about empowering our boys, right, like we would empower our girls, I think it's an opportunity for moms to stand up and say, mm-hmm. we need to do better. Because what I have found is that when dads do that, there is almost this backlash of, oh, I mean, almost a privilege, right? That, oh, yes. You're saying this even though you've gotten all of this. And, oh, now you just want the same privilege for your boys.
You're Whereas trying to I think preserve when, the patriarchy is, yes. is the kind of reception that gets.
And so in with all of the research that you have done, the study that you have done, how important is it for moms to really step up and be those advocates? Because we have the lived experience,
yes.
of having to fight for empowerment.
I think it is so important. And, you know, it's not right or fair that dads who speak up on behalf of boys get that reception, right? But mm-hmm. that's what it is right now. Optics matter. And so it is a lot easier for those of us who are female, who have experienced very acutely the many ways in which gender stereotypes and expectations limited our options and harmed us. I think we are in a fantastic position, those of us who are now parents of boys and see similar things happening, to make those parallels and to say, yes, we made great strides and we needed to make great strides and must continue for girls. And it's not okay to continue to allow gender and gender stereotypes to harm and limit our boys. It's not good mm-hmm. for any of us when we are held back and limited. So let's work and let's draw attention to that. We took action. We took action in the 70s, you know, Title IX and getting more females mm-hmm. involved in sports and in college. Right now, that ratio has so shifted that it's even more acute than it was in the 70s, except now it's dramatically in favor of girls in college than boys. Well, maybe it's time to take action on that. And that's where we can be such powerful voices.
And maybe it can be an and, not a but, right?
Yes.
But
it's like, I want it to be an and. I don't want to hold anybody back. I think we as a world and as a society will do better when people are given what they need to thrive. And we are talking about basic human needs. You mentioned, you know, thinking of your sons as human first and foremost. Yes. Mm-hmm. Our boys are human and they deserve as much care and compassion as any other human on this planet.
So I could talk to you all day about this, but I do have to wrap up. But I do want to know, what do you hope is the main takeaway for parents or caregivers of boys when they pick up your book, Building Boys, and read it?
I hope their main takeaway is hope. I really do. Because there are forces aligned. We're not going to change all of the schools right now, but each of us talking up, that can make a difference. And in the meantime, it is 100% possible to raise great guys who thrive in the world, who thrive without hurting and harming others. Now, listen, I want to be very, very clear. There's no unique recipe to make a great guy. All humans are flawed. Mm-hmm. We all make mistakes, but I want to embrace the full humanity. I want parents to embrace the full humanity of their boys. And in doing that, we're going to make this a better world for all of us.
I love that so much. I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. We've been talking with Jennifer Fink. She's a parenting expert. Her new book is out. It is called Building Boys. If you have boys or you have boys in your life, this is such a necessary read. You can also listen to Jennifer's podcast on boys. Go back too and find episodes that work for what you might be struggling with as a parent or a caregiver. But Jennifer, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you, Gemma. I enjoyed talking with you.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudet. We'll see you tomorrow.
Two men of color vanished after last being seen in the same deputy's patrol car.
I knew something was wrong. The mother knows.
It's the strangest case, the most unsettling case.
Listen to The Last Ride podcast, part of the NPR Network.